The Bible is funny.
Well, hello again, the Bible is Funny podcast family. How are you doing today? Don't answer aloud because I can't hear you, but you know, maybe send it to me on Instagram or something. I wonder how we're coming to find each other today. Big shouts out here at the beginning. I've been asking for some of you to tell me when you listen to the podcast, and great stories are rolling in. You out there who is a baker that is baking at 2 a.m. and listening to a podcast, shouts out to you. Shouts out to the guy in the food pantry that's stocking a food pantry all alone. I'm so thankful to hear those stories of how you're in this thing. Both of those were like, you're like by yourself, but you're not by yourself. Bakery and food pantry person, we're in this together. So thanks for listening. If you want to send another story in, I love those stories. Send those to me on Instagram at The Bible is Funny. But I am jumping all over the place because I'm excited about this podcast. Let's start with it at the very beginning. My name is Anthony Russo. This is The Bible is Funny podcast. We talk about the funniest parts of the Bible and what we can learn from them. Thank you so much for being here today. It's a special day. I do have a very special guest that I get to introduce everybody to today. And I'm also wearing shoes for the first time that I've ever done this podcast. I'm wearing shoes because it just felt appropriate for the guest we have today, which is none other than Ben Kirby. Ben Kirby, the mastermind behind an account called Preachers and Sneakers, and now a book called Preachers and Sneakers. Ben, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Anthony, thanks for having me, man. This is fun to talk with you, and that makes one of us. I'm not wearing shoes. I don't think I've worn shoes since May of 2019, which is has inhibited my entire whole thing on Instagram significantly since basically overnight people stopped wearing shoes and going to church all at once. So that's
so
super special.
True. So true. Do you get this a lot, though, when people... Because now, man, I have so much to talk to you about. For a while, you were anonymous, and now people... You have your face, you have your name on all this, which I want to talk about all that in a minute. But now that people
My
know
face,
you...
specifically. Is just the whole thing.
Is there
I put
a
it
pressure?
On for this podcast.
You did. You got dolled up. Everyone can't see you, but it's beautiful.
I got it. Sorry.
Is there a sneaker pressure now when you go out? Do you get a lot of, like, what are those? Or what is your... What do you get pressure to rock quality sneakers now?
I don't think I've told anybody this, but up to this point, since being out in public, I've had zero people stop or notice me out in public, which, like, you know, if we're being honest, deep down, my ego hurts a little bit, but
of
also
course.
That's God maybe protecting me from, you know, getting way too high on myself. So as of now, I'm still pretty safe in terms of what I can wear out in public. But I lean more to the minimalism of it now because I just like don't want to think about it and like can't really justify having a bunch of shoes now. So I wear one of three pairs of shoes: Ultra Boosts, some Hokas, which are my running shoes, or Air Max Ones if I'm dressing up. So it's like one of those three pairs.
Yeah, it's a solid rotation. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm going to go in here a little bit because I'm looking at you. Go follow, if you're not already, which I don't know how you could not be already, but on Instagram, follow Preachers and Sneakers if you're not already. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at you right now, though. I'm wondering if you have this experience. I have a very forgettable face. I look like everyone. Like, I regularly have, like, people don't recognize me, and also people will be like, don't I know you from somewhere? I'm like, no, I just
having
like
to reintroduce yourself to like the same people six times over and over and over.
It's just a bald white guy with glasses. Like this is what your stock character on Madden or whatever would come
the
up
Sims.
Like. This is exactly. I forget who I was. I was at some sort of conference and I wanted to meet the speaker afterward, and they're like, "Don't I know you from somewhere?" I just was like,
"You." I mean, you know, everyone knows average bald guy, so kind of. But no, specifically, we have not met before.
I'm so and what I'm referring to, you know, we don't have like a real beard. We don't have like a real like that's
defining
Anthony
feature.
Yeah. Do you experience that, Ben? I don't want to put that on you.
No, I do. I do. I mean, you know, being in quarantine for whatever for the past year, it's been a little less of that. But I have pretty similar experience. I'm like 5'10", over 200 pounds. I've got brown hair, brown eyes. I have, you know, the averagest body and the averagest sounding voice. And so, like, yeah, not very many distinguishing features. I haven't really gotten much out of life from my appearance or aura. Personality gang for the for the win.
We were dealt sevens.
That's right.
In this category. Just straight seven. They're fine. There's nothing that gets wrong with them. They're not going to win you any hands.
That's right.
I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. I want, you just released your book a couple months ago. If you didn't, you should have followed the Instagram if you're following along. You should have followed the Instagram a minute ago when I said that. I also need you to buy this book because this book is incredible, so thought-provoking, so well structured. I enjoyed this book so much.
Thank you.
And in it, you talk some about the beginnings of Preachers and Seekers, but I wondered if you'd catch some listeners up on how did this whole thing get started?
For sure. And I didn't pay him to say any of that. He could have easily not written the book or asked me to be on the podcast. So thanks for saying that. It's very kind. The nuts and bolts of it is 2 years ago, I noticed a worship leader wearing a pair of Yeezys that were reselling for around $850 or so on a YouTube video, just randomly. And I was in the middle of my MBA program, had a little bit of time on my hands, and for whatever reason that morning, I felt compelled to make some stupid Instagram videos about, like, hey, how much is this guy getting paid that he can wear $800 shoes, that kind of thing. And that was on a YouTube video, and I started watching related YouTube videos and realized there was this whole culture of pastors and worship leaders that were wearing legitimately expensive and hyped up streetwear.
Yeah.
And so what that eventually turned into was me just reposting these guys' own photos and then putting the price tag of what they were wearing next to it. And just that tension or juxtaposition that I did caused people to absolutely lose their minds without even me having to say one thing or the other. Just putting those two pictures next to each other caused people to just completely dissolve in their brains. And so it started just that. And I did basically that for two straight years. And along the way, I wrote a book about some of the deeper things that came up about it, because it very quickly I realized this was not about sneakers at all. It was about all right. of us Christians and churches' relationship to wealth and fame and image and all that kind of stuff. And so it's weird how things work out, but 2 years later, I guess that's what my deal is now.
And so, yeah, like it seemed to go 0 to 100 very, very quickly. Like I got sent to me, as I'm sure most people's stories with your account would be, like, did you see this yet? And I was like, oh, cool. I want to say 5,000 followers at that point. It was like, okay, well, yeah, this is cool. This guy's out here hustling on Instagram. Ain't we all? and like the next time I saw it was like way approaching 100,000 or something.
Yeah, I started the account on March maybe 17th of 2019, and in a month I had 100,000 followers. And to your point, I was not hustling. I was just posting those same type of pictures over and over, and it was pure organic. Like, I didn't do any ads. I wasn't doing any hashtags, really. I didn't care. Like, I wasn't trying to grow this to the moon, but I mean, everybody had that same experience. Like, hey, have you seen this yet? Because everybody, it touched some kind of nerve for a lot of different types of people, and it forced them to contend with this idea that can get kind of messy. And so all of those things lend itself to creating some buzz. So,
yeah.
But it was cool. I mean, there was days where I was getting tens of thousands of new followers a day and just not knowing what to do with that, as just like, it's happening on my phone in this house that I'm just sitting here like, what?
Right.
What is this? Like, I'm not making any money. I don't have any practice with how to do any of this. I'm just this guy with a wife and two dogs that said a funny thing and kind of came up with maybe a creative way to post. And it basically developed a new category, and people like started aligning their theology with or against what I was doing. It was just it became real heavy real quick.
Yeah, it is. That's the three questions. You know, are you pre-trib? Are you mid-trib? Are you Calvinist or Arminian? Right. Are you for or against preachers and sneakers?
That's right.
There's only three things we talk about. One thing I thought was fascinating, man, in your book you talk about this, is that you were approached early by, like, Good Morning America, I think it was, that you said?
The Today Show.
Okay, the Today Show.
Within, like, 3 weeks of starting the account, like, asking me to... I think what they wanted me to do was come on and, like, confront the pastors as if I had, like, beef. Because, you know, the media loves a good pastoral scandal or whatever, and sure. to them it looked like I was, you know, unearthing this big financial scandal or something. And to me, I was like, I think this only serves you. This doesn't really serve me at all. So as a guy that likes attention and likes to make people laugh, it really hurt to turn it down, but I eventually turned it down because it just was like, this would be buying into the hype way too early and would just make things, like, I didn't know what I felt about the account. Like, I didn't know if I was, it was just happening, and part of it felt good, part of it felt bad, and so I wasn't completely secure and didn't have a plan. And so, like, to go on the biggest stage ever and talk about what I was doing seemed like, this might be foolish, so I'm not going to do it.
But, dude, like, so you said no thank you to the Today Show.
I know.
That's insane.
2 years later, like, you think I haven't thought about that every single day. Like, wow, this could have gone way different.
Yeah, man, I was just blown away by that.
It wasn't a big time. It was a panic anxiety thing more so, just like, dude, I don't know what's happening with this, and I don't know what's going to happen if I go and just pour gasoline on it.
Right.
And so, you know, I guess it's part of my better judgment, but I wanted to do it, but I had other people whose lives were going to be affected. So
you were also anonymous at that point, right? Like, nobody knew.
Right.
That it was you.
Right. And so I, you know, at the time, with very little information, people are starting to get real mad and message me and stuff and, like, really start to, like, question my salvation and basically damn me to hell.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, thinking about going on the Today Show, I was like, maybe this would invite people to come try to murder me. I don't know. People are really freaking out. Like, people are really overreacting about me showing the world how much these sneakers are worth. And so, it was a weird time and basically faced with decisions with imperfect information. So,
yeah, because really what you were doing, as I was reading through your story, I was thinking the only information you were bringing to the table was how much that stuff cost, because yep. so many of us don't know. Like, there's so many of us.
Or how much it would bring in the resale market. Like, if you were to sell it today, how much you could collect for it. Yeah.
Which I understand where that point of contention comes from, but I completely agree with your sentiment that if you could sell this thing today for this much money, that's how much money it's worth.
That's right.
If your grandpa, you know, gave it to you, it's, of course, it was free to you, but that's what it's worth, you know, today. So I love that. But I was just curious about that, because it's like, when you boil it down, you just said two true things. That's Mac Brock. That's how much his shoes cost.
Yep. And people couldn't wrap their heads around that. Like, the fact that I wasn't saying, this is evil, or I was saying, like, dude, this is tight that these guys are able to do this. Like, I purposely stayed in the middle. Come to find out, that was the wiser thing for me to do, because it's kind of impossible to make a judgment about a lot of these things oftentimes, because there's so much nuance and specific situations around each one of these guys' situations. But that really made people mad on both sides, because they wanted me to be on their agenda, or, like, mm-hmm. be the spokesperson for their agenda. And I'm like, dude, all I can say, the only thing I know for sure, is that this guy is wearing those shoes, and those shoes are worth this much. And that's enough to cause all this discussion about freaking celebrity culture, about getting rich off of preaching, all that kind of stuff. And so that's enough for me. Like, I don't even have to dig any deeper.
Yeah.
I appreciate you noticing that, because not everybody picked up on that. People quickly are like, oh, this guy's just here to hate on pastors. This guy's just here to shame pastors.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I don't know, but you cannot argue with me that these shoes are worth this much, because they are.
Yeah, dude. And I love even, you just said just now when you were talking about getting the Today Show, I didn't know how I felt about this at this point. Like, I think my experience with preachers and sneakers was, I don't know how I feel about this. I don't know what to make of all this. What I thought was so great about the book was, you walked through, it's essentially like, whatever your preconceived notion when you think the guy from Preachers and Sneakers wrote a book, it's essentially you stating that same thing over and over again. I don't know how I feel about this, but here's something that's true.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many segments that come to mind. The one early on I thought stuck out so much was, you talk about Harley moments, I think. Is that Is that what you call them?
Uh-huh.
And it was an experience from your childhood. Can you catch listeners up on that quickly? If I'm giving away too much of the book, stop me. You should all buy the book.
But you should buy
I want to do these little. I just want to catch them up to speed a little bit.
Yeah, you should buy the book. But it's this the Harley moment thing I used as a story the first time that I even had a question about this tension about guys that live off donations in service of God. And this story happened 25 years ago, but basically our family pastor growing up drove up to our house wearing, driving a new Harley, and me as like a six-year-old was like, how can this guy afford this motorcycle? I mean, and I've found out recently that there's all this other nuance around the motorcycle and the salaries of pastors and everything. But the point of the story was that this was the first time that I at least raised an eyebrow to this idea that like, hey, something in me thinks that a pastor or a minister should be living in a different way than the rest of us because of the way that they make money. You know, specifically this situation, this guy didn't take a salary from the church. He's got all these other streams of income. I quickly learned that after publishing this for all the world to hear. But the point of the story still holds true is that, like, look, other people have had these same moments too where they don't know why, but there's something in them that stirs when they see a guy or a girl that is saying one thing or is preaching one thing and then seems to be living another thing. Again, the guy in my story, I never indicted him. I don't judge him. I love this person, and this person has done a ton for my family. But as a six-year-old with no context and no experience or understanding of anything, I still had this like something in me that said this seems off, and I wanted to point to that in order to help people maybe dissect that for themselves to say, hey, there. I wonder if there's situations that happen for me where I've felt that, because you're probably not alone.
Yeah. It was such a tone setter for the experience of the book and has like become part of my intellectual vocabulary now of how I experience things. Because you referenced too that great quote, I think it's from a Supreme Justice, when they were trying to like do litigation on pornography. It's just a timeless quote. Yep. I can't write this thing out for you, but I know it when I see it. That's paraphrased. That's right. So you referencing that, and that just became such a great filter through which to see this conversation, because like you said, like you're getting into, you wouldn't suggest, I don't think anyone would, that a pastor can't drive a car, right?
Correct.
That seems crazy.
Yep.
But then what do they need that nice of a car? Or more importantly, I thought one conversation.
Are we ever allowed to comment on the niceness of a car? Like, because, you know, the response to that is like, who are you to say how nice of a car this guy can have? And it's like, well, I'm nobody, but. Also, is there ever a point where it's like, hey, this guy's got three Lambos. That seems extreme, but am I not allowed to even comment that? So it's just like, I think it's a good thought exercise to say like, look, we don't want to be judgmental or be like holier than thou, because we have our own stuff that we've got to deal with. But also, as somebody that is supposed to be leading people spiritually and also being funded by these sacrificial donations of those of which they want to be led spiritually.
Right.
Do you have any responsibility to say, hey, dude, like, what's the deal with the jet? You know, and I think there is a point where you can say that. It's maybe different for everybody, but to bury your head in the sand because you don't want to be judgmental or something, I think is also kind of intellectually lazy.
Oh, for sure. Do we need the jet is a question we should all ask ourselves.
Yeah, I ask myself that all the time when I get on mine.
Reminds me of Arrested Development when they're buying that crazy house, the second pool house. Well, then we'll have it. That's why you get the jet. And another point you bring up too is the demonstrative nature of it, right? So it's not just having the thing, but also when you take time out to like, it's one of your posts recently, and I don't remember the pastor, sort of like awkwardly showing off a bag that's like a $3,000 bag, and it's just like, is it?
It's again, one thing to have it. It is another thing to promote you having it yourself from your own platform.
Let everyone know that I have this very expensive bag. And in that, like, set of, again, I don't know. I don't want you to hide it, but.
Right. But also, like, it's a, have, for Christians specifically, like, do we care about elevating ourselves? Like, are we real? So, like, by social, it's like such a question about social media in general. It's like so much self-promotion on social media to begin with. So much of what we post is to, like, probably get people to envy our lives some way or the other. And so it's like, do we care when people are clearly trying to promote themselves wearing a thing that is so expensive that even if it is a gift, it's like you're still taking the time to get this well-curated photo on your page, clearly showing you holding something with a brand that is very distinguishable.
Right.
It's just like, is that okay? Or should you ever care about that? Like, should we just write it off and be like, look, so-and-so is going to do so-and-so. Like, he's flexing or whatever. It's like, I think there's some longer-term implications there where you're just like, dude, it looks like you're trying to grow your own personal brand, or you're trying to get people to think you're awesome. And it's like, yeah. What? Like, what is the outcome of that?
Right. And one thing you do throughout the book that I want to do some with you here at some point in this podcast is then you also juxtapose that current state of where we are, which is, again, inarguable. These are inarguable facts. These are the most prominent faith leaders of the evangelical American Christian movement that are the ones featured on your page.
That's right.
This movement was started by a homeless Jewish man, like, who had nothing to his name.
Whom was murdered.
Who was
brutally
killed.
And then buried in a borrowed tomb.
So is it, again, and this is just, I just could talk about this all day. Is it fair enough to ask the question of, boy, did we get lost somewhere? If that's where we are today, is like me taking my Bugatti in to teach everybody about the ways of this homeless man.
Right. And how we should emulate him.
Right. So you do a brilliant job throughout of even laying up like actual biblical text. I loved the chapter on the like blessed movement, like this like hashtag blessed idea. And I don't remember if you went into it explicitly, but we all know how that's used on Instagram of like, look at this thing, whatever it is. And sometimes I even don't want to villainize all of that, 'cause sometimes it's like, look at my beautiful family or whatever. And yep. I'm very blessed. That's fine. But then you go like to like the Sermon on the Mount and you're like, well, this idea of blessed, like, blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek, blessed are the, like, have we just gotten so far off from where this thing is supposed to be? So that's my question to you, Ben. Is that what happened? Did we get really far off from where we're supposed to be?
Yeah, all these things in our Western, modern Christian experience, in and of themselves, are probably amoral, like air conditioning, coffee shops, elevation worship, like super good preaching, all that kind of stuff. But all the stuff together and all of the production and image and money that goes into it makes it seem like we have swung in another direction. Because I definitely don't want to, I'm not a legalist ever. And I don't want to get into the game of saying like, well, Jesus would have never worn Air Maxes. Well, it's like, well, Jesus also wouldn't have had an iPhone. Dumbo, like that you can't.
Jesus didn't use indoor plumbing.
Right, right, exactly. So if you want to go down that route, that's not a
dangerous journey.
Yeah,
dangerous journey, my friend.
Yeah, but in terms of like lifestyle, or I mean, maybe not even lifestyle, but like worldview and humility, stuff like that. I think we should emulate that. And much of what we do on social media is not humble. And much of the preaching today, I mean, if we're honest, isn't really humble. It's pretty self-serving to the guy or the girl up there oftentimes. Mm-hmm. Or if it's not self-serving to them, it's serving to the people consuming it and not pointing people to glorify God. It's pointing people to like figure out how God's going to help you solve your problems, which is like such a small view of a God that apparently created the entire universe.
Right.
And so like that mixed with, and this isn't completely answering your question, but I'm going down my own tangent.
Yeah, go on.
That connected with like the small ratio of Americans compared to the rest of the world and their existence in life. If our theology is based on all this extra production and comfort and stuff, mm-hmm. it's like it withers away once you start thinking about any other people group in the world. Because if you're talking about, we're talking about the issue of being blessed, like God blessed me with this job promotion. He blessed me with this handbag. He blessed me with this new house or this hot wife or whatever. It's like, well, what does that mean for the rest of the world that,
right,
like the billions of people that live in poverty? Like, look, I'm sitting in a very air-conditioned house. I've got a TV behind me and a PlayStation. I'm talking to you on a pretty nice camera.
Yeah.
Like, I've got nice stuff. I'm not asking people to sacrifice their nice stuff, but I want people to think about, like, hey, if you're looking to God to bless you ultimately with a job promotion or some kind of financial blessing, that's a tiny God that you're expecting, or that's a tiny thing to expect from a huge God, because he equally cares and loves for these people that are living in immense poverty. I don't know what that is, and I even talked about it in the book a little bit. It's like, I struggle with that. Like, I don't know why I get to sit in Dallas, like Comfort Nation, while people literally have to drink toilet water elsewhere.
Right.
Like, I don't know what that is, but it's true that God does love both of those people. And so to just think God is here to bless us with this like surface level BS is just like, I think it's a dangerous game to play. And in turn, some of the pastors don't help with that, because they ambiguously reference, be ready for God's blessing or his favor on your life. It's like, well, what about the favor of the people that are dying from malaria in other countries, that kind of stuff? Like, I don't think God works that way.
Right.
He can, but I think he's got bigger stuff that he wants to do in people's lives than just like get them to ask for that job promotion or something.
Right. Oh, it is all of the questions you pose, including this one, are difficult and layered and nuanced, but important to ask. I think that the idea of being blessed has to supersede different. It has to go beyond that. Well, if you weren't born in America, well, you know, tough luck.
So like God hates you, or like, or you miscarry 14 times. Like God, like even here, like in nice, like we're pretty comfy America, people are going through just terrible, like dreadful things. But we just need to be prepared for our blessing, and God's got favor. Like God has more favor on such and such life because they have a beautiful baby and I miscarry a baby, that kind of thing. Like, dude, that just doesn't even logically make sense.
Yeah.
And so I want people to even think about that. Like, what's my theology based on? Am I deep down just trying to like use God as a vending machine where I say, like, look, God,
right,
I'm gonna pray, I'm gonna give, I'm gonna try to serve, and in hopes that you give me what I want.
Right.
I want people to maybe think past that, because like that's a very small, I think, small view of a huge God that could literally do miracles. And a lot of us, I struggle with plenty of doubts and like having no faith in situations and having trouble trusting God. But if you choose to believe a God that big, why not treat him that way? And like, don't treat him like a freaking genie, but treat him like with the respect that he probably deserves.
Right. And even what it does is it certainly broadens your scope of God, and it should make your view a lot bigger. If God comes through on something, it shouldn't be the same as like investing in Apple at the right time. Like,
right,
either God's going to come through or I'm going to invest in Bitcoin at the right moment. Like, those two things are, God is way, way bigger than that. So if everything could be accomplished by you investing in the right thing at the right time, okay, let's not say that this is like a God-sized issue then, which I thought was just a great thought to unpack. And all of these things, I mean, one thing I love, I do serve at a church, on staff at a church, and everybody, a conversation everybody's having, but I feel like is not being had out loud too much, is whatever we're doing is not working. Like, it's not working. People are going less. I saw a stat the other day, less than 50% of the population are involved in church, or the American population are involved in church for the first time in like recorded history or something.
Wow. So like it's lower than it's ever been?
Like, it's lower than 50%. It's always been at least 50% or above. I'm paraphrasing a stat I should have looked at.
Sure.
But I think it's like 50% or above were like a member of a church. And now for the first time, it's under that. They're like comfortable answering a poll that says, I got no affiliation with that. So at every church in America, to some degree, I have to believe there's a conversation about this is not like in the movement in the culture is trending down. And nobody's quite able to pinpoint it, but I was reading your book and I couldn't help but think this has something to do with it.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the chapter, but right. like this conversation is one we gotta have better.
Yeah, I think people are, at least me specifically, I really appreciate authenticity from people, and a lot of the production and overdoing it and the kind of happy-go-lucky attractional model stuff just seems fake to me. And I think people that are thinking people are going to see right through this. Like, this doesn't add up, because many people do think about all the other people groups in the world and the suffering that exists in the world. And like in America, people are really struggling. And so to have an experience that looks like, dude, I can't relate to this. Like, this dude's beautiful. This dude's got really nice clothing.
Yeah.
The worship band seems like a freaking rock band, which I don't have a problem with specifically, but I can say from talking to thousands of people that it is exclusionary. I don't know if that's a word, where it's just like, dude, this, I can't relate to this whole thing. Like, I'm struggling. I'm a single mom, or I've like lost a job. All of this seems like it's about money and fame, and the famous people are being elevated, and I'm actually looking for God. And so I think I have no basis for this other than my 2 years of experience on this, but I think God is refining his church in a way that's going to be painful, but is, I think, going to be better in the long run, where it's like the numbers are down because I think people are like, dude, I don't need whatever this consumeristic church thing is, where I show up, watch a service, listen to a sermon that motivates me or whatever, and then I leave. Like, that's not doing anything for my life. And you're asking me to donate to this, bro? Like, I think I know people have already started going back to doing kind of the home church thing, where it's like, look, we don't know all the answers, and we've got questions about some of these like secondary and tertiary things, but what we collectively believe is that we believe in Jesus and what he did for us, and that's about it. And we're not looking for some guru to, shape our whole worldview. We just want to read the Bible and try to seek after Jesus while also loving people and trying to take care of people regardless of what they can do for us. And I'm hoping more people move to doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think another element of that, which you bring up in the book, but have I mentioned that you should get this book, listeners?
You haven't yet, but I appreciate you bringing that
up. The name of the book. You mentioned another just really challenging question. And I think that this is, again, someone behind some of that stuff. I also want to pause real quickly and clarify just before we go on. There are a lot of churches doing a lot of really great things. I don't mean to say the church is not working. There's churches doing good things. But the movement of the culture at large is declining. And I don't think that's really arguable. Furthermore, you talk about fame. You talk about the idea of like make Jesus famous, which is like just the coolest thing to yell out at Passion. And I think you
it is.
It just feels big, right.
Big LED letters.
I don't
on
know
the screens.
What that phrase, even as I try to talk bad about it, I can't, because it just sounds right coming out of my mouth. Make Jesus famous feels good. But great questions asked about it. And one of them, the core one, which I just wanted to chat with you about. Kind of like, is fame good? Like, is this, when did we decide fame's a good thing, period?
Yeah.
So let's get Christians famous, because boy, do we love famous Christians. We love
we
Tim Tebow's back in the NFL. We're all celebrating it. We'll all take a moment in service this weekend and shout it out.
That's right.
It's take a big a win. It's a big win for the the community. So that's my question to you. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts? Is fame good?
Yeah, I think it's at least a dangerous game to play. I mean, not like life or death in a lot of ways, but I mean, how many situations do we have to see in news of dudes making clowns of themselves because of the fame going to their head? Like, it's so cliche, yet we continue to see it happen from guys that like rise to a point where people can't touch them, proverbially can't touch them, and then they screw it all up. Yet we still want to go to the most famous guy's church or the most famous worship band out there. And it's like kind of one of those nebulous things. It's like, there's not one person out there dishing out fame. It's all on us. Like, as people that, I mean, churches are made up of flawed humans.
Right.
And so of course us being in culture are going to bring that culture into Christian type culture if we're not careful. And so it makes sense to me, but it's just interesting that we as Christians haven't really seen much of a problem in our own pockets of celebrity making, like Tim Tebow's a great example, great dude. I posted about Tim Tebow once, and I got more hateful messages than any other pastor I posted about.
Say Tim.
Because he is an idol to people, and it's not his own fault, but people idolize this man because he's great. He's athletic, he's nice, he's good looking, he's jacked, all that kind of stuff. But if you're not careful and you don't at least audit who you idolize at that level, you're putting these guys in a lose-lose situation because so much becomes at risk when you are elevated to a level where you have millions of followers, reach across the world, you have local congregations that are like dying and living off of your every word. Well, now you being a flawed person, the moment you have any kind of moral hiccup, you erode everything and you cause the rest of us Christians to be like, look, it's, you know, he's got his own problems, he's got his own demons, whatever, but keep following Jesus. He's the one to follow. Like, none of us, I'm not perfect, none of us are perfect, but I'm saying putting guys at that level where people can see them as celebrities or superstars or being like the most gifted or whatever, the fallout is just so insane. So why would you even play in that sandbox of trying to like to try to prevent that fallout? Like, the job of pastor at a local level is hard enough.
Yeah.
So to be also a motivational speaker and a leadership coach and a co-writer for worship music and a
minor league baseball player,
a conference regular, all that kind of stuff, showing up on Oprah, all these kind of things.
Yeah.
Like, at an individual level, I get why most people would say, yeah, that's awesome. Like, people are appreciating what I'm saying. People are appreciating, you know, my gifts, all that kind of stuff. But collectively, if you're not careful, or if you at least don't have people around you that can say, hey, dude, you love this too much.
Yeah.
It's going to be a detriment to you, or it at a minimum risks eroding way more than you ever thought could erode. And so I just want people to be careful about if they're being put in that position or putting others in that position by like getting all giddy when you get around Tim Tebow or something.
Right, right.
And so like I've done 2 years of this where people give me the whataboutisms and also like, hey, who are you, hypocrite? Look, I get that there is some notoriety that comes from writing a book and having a big Instagram account, all that kind of stuff. But I'm not absolved from trying to say like, hey, guys, I'm just a dude and you should not put any stock in what I say. Like, do the research for yourself. Like, read the book. I think it will be helpful to wrestle with some things and to like lead some good discussion about how to be more authentic. But also, I am no more anointed than anybody, and I don't expect a green room, and I don't expect a PJ, and I don't expect any kind of nice treatment. But I also have to ask people around me to say, hey, even with all that, I still really like when people think I'm funny, or really like when people message me about how much I've changed their life from this book or for the Instagram account.
Sure.
Somewhat of a tangent, but fame in and of itself, I have no authority to say if it's completely good or completely bad, but to equate that as the metric for success for Jesus's name, I think is not completely going the full way, because people know Jesus's name but don't know him.
Right.
And the point is to not only let people know who he is, but also promote life change and make disciples and get people to turn from their sin. It's not just like, here's this guy Jesus and here's all the great stuff he did. Like, that's just part of it, bro.
Yeah.
And that's what fame is. It's just like name recognition, and that's just not even a close part of it.
Right. And there's a wild inconsistency to it as well. I want to get your thoughts on this, Ben. Tim Tebow, loved by so many Christians, Christian guy, outspoken Christian guy. Really good quarterback in college. Pretty good quarterback. He was okay in the NFL. I mean, he was, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah.
Nick Foles. Let's talk about Nick Foles for a second. Real committed Christian. Liberty University student. Super Bowl winning quarterback. Let me ask you this, Ben. How many times has Nick been invited to speak at Passion?
Not at once. Not once, I don't think.
Zero, Ben.
That's right.
Zero.
Yep.
That's how inconsistent even our little niche of fame can be.
That's right.
Nick Foles, long neck, a little bit of a bigger forehead, and I think that ultimately that's why the Christian world continues to choose Tim Tebow over Nick Foles.
Because we love beautiful people, we love talented people, and again, I don't live my life just like hating these things. I don't hate any of these things.
Right.
But I just want to be the type of person that asks, is this the best way to do it? Is this the best way to do church, to lead Christians, to do media and entertainment, all that kind of stuff?
Right.
Because many people just accept all this stuff as the status quo. And in turn, we just are letting somebody else dictate the trajectory of our faiths. And it's like, dude, that's lazy, bro.
Yeah.
At least ask the questions, I think.
Right. Dude, 100%. That's what every chapter does. It takes a topic and it poses some really good, healthy questions that we should be asking. Whether it's about, like, there's a chapter about political affiliation. And then there's also, like, some great, you have a great last chapter of some good questions to be asking ourselves. Because although, like you said, I'm no more anointed than anybody else. You do a great job just talking to you now and get a sense for it. Also in the book of saying, like, take stock, take inventory. You look back at the beginning of Preachers of Sneakers and said, there's some stuff I'd do differently. There's some stuff I didn't do right. And so to me, it's just that level of account, even self-accountability. We have to do it here before we can it, you know, collectively. All of us has to be doing it individually. And you did that. I know you wouldn't toot your own horn, but you did that in the book. You said, hey, there's some stuff, man, I didn't know what I was doing at first. And but you also turned down the Today Show, which says, you know, you're not like so, you're kind of silly, first of all, but then second of all, that you're not like so thirsty for it that it was like, I got to go do the thing.
Yeah, and I joke about it, but I do feel like that was the right decision for my family, because that level of publicity, like the tabloid level publicity and like main morning show stuff, it's very hard for that not to make it look like, oh, this guy's just doing a money grab, or this guy's just doing a publicity grab. And it's like, I don't want to be known for that by any means. But
are you willing to live with the fact that you might never meet Al Roker?
I'm still, you know, therapy has been expensive for that very reason, because it's a complicated question.
That was your shot. That was your shot.
And I missed it.
Okay. I wanted to cover so what we do on this podcast, I just want to talk to you about this all day, but I want to cover a Bible story with you, if that's okay.
Okay.
Can we talk through a Bible story?
Yes.
We can. This is what we do on the podcast. We read through the story. And I just want to get your thoughts on it. This story has always fascinated me. It's whenever I've every engagement with this story is interesting to me. And I just, when I was like, he's coming on the podcast, I really want to talk to him about this. And it's the story of, it's commonly referred to as the rich young ruler. If you've been in church, you know the story of the rich young ruler. That's the one I want to talk about. Matthew 19 is where we are. And I'm going to read a couple of verses here. Catch everyone up to speed. So Matthew 19 starts in verse 16. It says, just then a man came up to Jesus and asked, teacher, what good thing must I do to get eternal life? Why do you ask me about what is good? Jesus replied, there's only one who's good. If you want to enter life, keep the commandments. Which ones? He inquired. It's verse 18. I love that verse, by the way, Ben. The clarification. Which one?
All right, just to be clear.
I don't want to do all of them if I don't have to.
Like if I could do two or three or like maybe five at most. What are those five? Just like skate the line.
It reminds me very much of me at youth group. How far is too far? Girlfriend? Because I want to do the right thing.
But also I want to get the max value.
I want to go as far as I can in the wrong thing and then just stop. Still doing the right thing. Which ones? He inquired. That's verse 18. Jesus replied, you shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. Honor your father and mother and love your neighbor as yourself. All these I have kept, the young man said. What do I still lack? This is verse 21. Jesus answered, if you want to be perfect, go sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. Verse 22, when the young man heard this, he went away sad because he had great wealth. And I want to unpack this, but before we do, I feel like this next part, when I talk about the Bible is funny, is what I always think is funny. Verse 23, Jesus said to his disciples, truly I tell you, it is hard for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. Again, I tell you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. Verse 25, when the disciples heard this, they were greatly astonished and asked, who then can be saved? This is verse 25. Jesus says, it's really hard for rich people to be saved. Disciples' response, well, then who could possibly figure it out?
These guys are rich, man. You're saying they can't do it?
We've got nothing. What shot do we have?
God dang it, man.
Who then can be saved? These are the disciples, by the way. This is Matthew 19. These are the actual disciples. Well, if the rich guy can't do it, how are we supposed to do it? Love this story. Wanted to talk about it with you because I was talking to my wife about talking with you, and she said something so insightful. Being rich is something that sort of translates better than other things biblically to now. Like being rich in Bible times would carry certain things that it still does today, very side by side. And I want to read this. I wrote it up here. I want to read this. I think I pulled a quote. I'm going to be embarrassed now if I didn't. I didn't pull the quote, I don't think, but you talk about in the book the idea that there are so many teachings in the Bible like this one that seem to either directly or indirectly indict the rich, or at very minimum in this text say it is very difficult to be rich and enter the kingdom of heaven here. So like, what do you make of this story? What are your thoughts on this story?
It's uncomfortable to think about. Because you could easily bring up the proportion of our existence in America versus the rest of the world. And it's like, oh, we're all rich, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It's like that very well could be the case. And if that's the case, then that's not something I really want to think about much because that means I have to contend with my own situation. And I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to feel bad about, or at least even have a question about whether or not it's okay that I'm living as comfortable as I am.
Yeah,
in life, and people hate hearing that story. I think because
yes,
it is very easy for them to be like, "Oh shoot," but it's also I don't know how you get around it. Like I don't know. Like part of me wants to just bury my head in the sand when dealing with that story and what he says about that because it's just like so cut and dry. Like much of the Bible is like, all right, the Greek versus you know,
yeah, right,
but. I think it's very understood that he's talking about you with material wealth, and he's talking from a time where not many people had material wealth, and we all have material wealth here in the States. He basically is saying it is a dangerous game to be playing with both of those things.
Yeah.
And to love money. And it – I'm not completely sure what to do with it because it's like I don't want to be the type of person that says, well, I guess I've just got to sell everything and go to India. But part of like there's some days where I'm like, God, he's really like he might actually be telling us that we've got to do that, bro, because we've got it so good here.
It's certainly the gymnastics that I've seen in this passage, because you think about how often we teach, right? We teach a pastor teaching to a congregation. The wealthy people in the congregation are what keeps a church running financially. So the gymnastics you'll often see with this text of like immediately, well, it's not about like, not everyone needs to sell all their things and get, so we just back up from this so quickly of like, well, let's not sit with this at all, that he gives him a commandment, that Jesus gives this guy a commandment that's not given anywhere else. That's not like in the Ten Commandments. It's not, he references other commandments that everyone else are held to. And then he gives this guy a specific one. I just am infinitely fascinated by
this. And I just think about like trying to put myself in his shoes when God says, you'll have heavenly wealth. And in your head, you're like, I mean, all right. But it's like, I've got real wealth now, bro. Heavenly wealth is great later, but the bird, I'm trying to get mine right now.
The bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. That's right.
It's like time value of money. Money now is worth way more than money later.
Yeah.
But like you can almost feel the wind go out from his sails. You know, this conversation between Jesus and the rich young ruler, it's like I would probably have the same reaction. Like God. Well, that's the one thing. Like, I was down to go to Afghanistan,
yeah, right,
and be a Navy SEAL for you, but not. I mean, I'm still trying to get this Chick-fil-A, bro. You know,
right?
And so I don't know. It, you know, because you, I don't want to be a fundamentalist, and like, it's very easy to want to say, like, well, 100%. Okay, clearly, God wants us to be poor and to go be with the poor. but there's all these other elements. It was like, okay, well then who is paying for this ministry?
Exactly.
Like, who is literally like putting someone on a plane to go do this ministry? So it doesn't seem that he's saying, even this is the gymnastics, but it doesn't seem like he's saying every single time you have money, you need to give it away because
right.
you're, it's really hard for you to get into heaven. Cause he later says, and I'm going to really butcher it, but basically like all things are possible with God, where literally because of God, now you can get into heaven as a rich person.
Yeah. Right. So, or, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm not completely sure what to, and correct me if that's heresy. If that's heresy, isn't like the verse right after it says, after the camel through the eye of the needle, he says something about,
yeah, with
what's
man,
the verse after that?
It's 26. Jesus looked at them and said, with man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible.
Right. And so he's yeah. literally saying, I think, I'm no eisegesis freaking nerd here, but he's saying that it is at surface level, it is very hard for somebody to love, to be all about their money and also be all about God.
Yeah.
But in my infinite power and wisdom, I can also give you salvation, rich people.
Right.
And so after that, I'm not sure completely what to do with that.
Right. Right. Because you have characters throughout the Bible. You have Lydia, you have different characters in the Bible that through contextual clues, we can take away that they had some money and that they were funding ministries. Paul asks people to fund his ministry.
Yeah.
So it is, this book, this conversation, so important. I'm just going to say it here because I haven't said it yet. Preachers and Sneakers, the name of the book and the Instagram. You should buy it. Read it. Read it with other people. Talk about it. We've been talking about it in the Russo home because they're just good questions of Jesus looked a guy in the face and said, sell everything you have. That's your next step. So whoever we are, we can't say, well, the next step would never be for me to sell everything. Well, we've got a pretty well-documented example where that was somebody's next step.
Right.
So questions.
It's funny how sneakers caused all this. Like I really just wanted to stay talking about sneakers, but now we're talking about the theology of the rich young ruler and Jesus' actual intent about rich people. It's like, dude, I'm way over my head. But I'm happy, like, to the idea that y'all were talking about it within your family, that is really fulfilling to me that it, for whatever reason, the stupid sneaker thing caused people to discuss pretty deep issues that I think are meaningful to wrestle with.
They're meaningful. They're important. It's such good. It's good work that you're doing, Ben. I'm happy to spread the word about it. I just encourage everybody to engage with this conversation and just fill his comment section with all kind of hateful messages.
Hate
about
vitriol.
Your favorite.
I'm used to it. You'll be have welcome company.
How dare you? Not Tim Tebow. Not Tim.
You do know that he played in the NFL, right?
Have you heard?
Oh, I didn't.
You ever heard of the Gators, Ben? Did you ever play for the Gators?
SEC Network. He's got an SEC Network deal. Oh, I had no idea. As a guy that spends 10 hours a day on Instagram, I had no idea that Tim Tebow played sport football.
Quick funny story about Tim that I love. I love telling my friends, and you're a friend now. I hosted an event that his mom was at, Pam Tebow, lovely woman, did a great job. I introduced her and she got up to speak or whatever. And she referenced me during the message and she called me Andy. She was like, I was talking to Andy prior.
Oh, big Andy. Andy and I are really good friends. The best of friends.
Oh no, my one connection to Tim Tebow, and now I'm gonna be like, hey, it's Anthony, do you remember? She's like, no, I don't remember an Anthony at that.
Tony, do you remember Tony?
No. Do you remember an Andy? Yeah, there was an Andy there. You could have Andy call me. I don't know anyone else. Pam Tebow, lovely lady. And the Tebows in general. If you guys ever want to come on the podcast, Tebows, you're welcome.
That's right.
Thanks again so much, dude. This was so fun. Such a
Absolutely.
Good chat. Love to
it's
have
great
you
to
back
meet
on.
You.
Great to meet you too. Thanks and for
this, I love your perspective on people can take things way too seriously, way too much, and that gets really exhausting. And so to have an angle, a humor angle with the Bible where it's not insulting, but also like, all right, guys, we're allowed to laugh, we're allowed to poke fun at each other. I appreciate anybody that's willing to do that.
Yeah.
So thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, dude. I didn't go into it much either, but the beginnings of our journeys are so similar too, where I was like, I don't know what this means. Like, I'm making jokes about the Bible, but I don't know what does that mean? I don't know. And people would be like, you sound like you hate the Bible. I'm like, well, I definitely don't hate the Bible, but I don't know what I'm doing. I'm right. figuring this out. I'll get asked, like, why did you start it? I'm like, I don't have good answers. It was funny to me. And now it's like developed into a thing, but it's sort of the response to it has shaped a lot of why it is important, why I think it's a good conversation. So
absolutely,
again, thank you so much. This is awesome.
Thank you, Anthony.
Absolutely. You listeners, thank you so much for coming along on the journey. Thank you for everybody that rates and reviews the podcast. I always super appreciate that. It's the best way for us to spread the word about what we're doing here. Thanks so much. If you're not following The Bible Is Funny, it's at The Bible Is Funny on Instagram. You can message me there. It's just me, Anthony. I think I said this a couple of times ago, but people are like, who am I talking to? And the it's just me. It's just little old Anthony.
That's all they need.
It's all you need. I had like a really good friend. Like, I didn't want to message you because I didn't know who it was. It's just me. So thank you guys so much. We'll be back with another episode here very soon.